We're back for a new season and under similar circumstances to Despite the Result, we hope you've bothered to join us as we, or rather the other people in the studio, will be discussing the latest in a line of horror shows from the lads. The Chronicles, James Hunter joins myself, Stephen Goldsmith, and that Gareth Barker in the studio. Long time no see, James. But
it is.
I guess some things never change.
Some things never change. I'm back here again talking about Struggling Sunderland.
We always say we're going to monitor this, Gareth, don't we, and see, and sort of try and book the guests that we generally come on after good results, whether that would make a difference or not. Anything's worth a go.
I'm trying to think if we've ever had a good result.
You had your lucky socks, Gareth.
Lucky socks,
you got
lucky
guest.
They didn't work, the lucky socks, did they? They didn't go in the bin, but they probably should have gone in the bin after that debacle. Disappointment. That's why I should get some socks.
It just says
disappointment. And then I wouldn't be disappointed with the socks.
Yeah.
Because the socks would have worked.
That would sum up your life generally, not just football, I guess.
Well, it probably would. I mean, look at this. Look at us here.
How many? Cheap shot, but it was easy.
Three seasons.
It was an open goal, wasn't it?
Three or four seasons. But this is the fourth season I think we're into now. And, you know, I'm spending such a long time we used to.
We're still waiting to kick on, generally.
Yeah.
But,
it's funny, second guest we ever had was Gary Gowers. And they've been, like, relegated in the back again. Mm. And we're still in the same place.
Yeah, look forward to that on Thursday in the end of the light. I guess now, James, we sack the manager and look for a new manager bounce.
Well, one game into the season, so, you know, there's plenty of time.
I mean, this killed my holiday, sort of added to my post-holiday blues, as Gareth corrected me before the show, because I was waiting for my transportation to the airport to come home, and then when I got there, Proctor texted me and said, you know, we've lost 4-2, so I was grumpy about that. And then I went and checked in my bags, and they told me it was a 3-hour flight delay. And it just sort of compounded it all. And nothing like Sunderland to spoil you. Yeah, well, it wasn't exactly my holiday because it was coming to an end.
If it's over a 3-hour flight delay, you might be able to claim it back, just to let you know. So that's something to think about.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
A few hundred quid.
I didn't say that on the letter they give us.
You'd have to do some investigating, but that's just what I've heard.
Mm. Yeah. No, it was a pretty grim afternoon at Leicester. I don't know about in sunnier climes where you were, but it was bad enough
well,
where
that's
we
it.
Were.
The Leicesters are going to be relying on you too. I've got some points and some questions I can ask, but I didn't watch the game, so I can't really give my opinion as such. So you two are sort of... You're holding the show up tonight, I think. You're my arms.
No, God help us.
But what strikes me initially, James, is we're tired of saying on this podcast, you know, we write things, we do the show, and we're sick of saying that this sort of group of players can't afford to give less than 100% or almost run themselves into the ground. We saw that last season, the back end of last season, when we stayed up, and the players will run themselves into the ground. Now, that's not realistic to sustain, is it? So, in that respect, have we done enough in the transfer market over the summer, do you think?
Well, this is the biggest frustration, isn't it? Because Sunderland fans have seen that this group of players and previous groups of players over the last couple of seasons, last three seasons, have got it within them to produce performances because they've come good in the nick of time for the last 3 years. But, you know, that's not really viable in the long term. They need to start better and get points, you know, on the board early on so that they're not left in that back-against-the-wall situation in April and May. Because if you keep on tempting fate, sooner or later it's going to come back and bite you, and you are going to wind up being relegated. You make the point about has enough been done in the transfer market? Well, on the evidence of what we saw on Saturday, certainly not. There's been one player come in for a good amount of money, Jermaine Lenz, who looked like a player at Doncaster in pre-season and also did okay in Hanover. Set up a goal at Leicester on Saturday, but throughout the rest of the team, the only players that have come in for a couple of million pounds here and there, and really I think you need to be spending more than that if you're going to improve the team at Premier League level.
How long can we put up with this sort of trio in midfield, Gareth? I know we have a player to come in, to be fair, but it's just, I don't know, people have been speaking before saying, you know, the team still looks better than the first game of last season, but it's back to the midfield, and I'm sick of talking about it. It's the engine room. We don't have enough power in there. We don't have enough presence in there. As I said, an OMV is going to come in, but looking at that, I know they're going to be trying to do things behind the scenes, and it's easy just to criticise them and say you should have done more, but it's frustrating, isn't it?
I think firstly, you'd say it's one game, so however disappointing it was, and it was disappointing, you've got to keep that level of perspective, because I think we're in danger of hitting some sort of peak hysteria after one match, and that's driven by a summer of, you know, froth, basically, of transfers, and this team's going to do this, and this team have improved here, and they've improved there. And I think on the pitch, unless the results are good, obviously people will react, and that's fair enough. People are, you know, within the rights to get irritated about that performance at the weekend, but at the same time, it's almost like the off-the-pitch stuff becomes more important than the actual game itself, and it becomes this competition, this battle to sign as many brilliant players as you possibly can, and the bottomless pit of money that apparently exists that Ellis Short's got isn't being used. Well, we don't really know the full situation. I don't think financially the situation has moved on since Christmas time, when we brought in one player in Jermaine Defoe and we got rid of Altidore and did that deal. And the wage bill, I think we all know by now that the wage bill then was pretty much at breaking point, and 6 months down the line that's not going to have changed. So I think in terms of bringing people in for big money, I mean, all the noises seem to suggest that the money's there to spend on players. The problem they've got is
the wage bill.
Yeah. And if you're going to spend £50 million on a player, he's not going to be on 20 grand a week, is he? He's going to be on 50 grand a week, 60 grand a week. If you bring one player in like that, you've got one player, and you've got this money to spend, but it's just a difficult situation, and the squad is bloated with bad footballers, that, as we've seen, on massive wages, probably, who we can't get rid of because nobody else wants them. I mean, we've got Mavrias sitting there, Roberge, Bridcut, Buckley, Graham, Fletcher. I bet you, if you combine their wages per week, I bet you're looking at over between £100,000 and £150,000 a week straight away. If you got rid of all those six players and brought in two good players across their wages, you'd probably improve the squad, even though you've taken numbers out of it. So it's a difficult one with the transfers, because everyone seems to now want to buy. Like, I mean, Van Aanholt's being questioned, and rightly so, after the weekend, because he was so awful. But we've seen that Van Aanholt can play well from left back, so it's a difficult situation now where people are worried, rightly so, but it's just that the situation creates the pressure, and how are we going to respond to that?
You're right on the finances, Gareth, and you're also right that, you know, you shouldn't rush to a snap judgment after one game. I think what was so frustrating on Saturday was that it wasn't just losing against Leicester, a team of, you know, who are in the same area of the table as Sunderland last season and will be again this season, I'm almost certain of that. But it was the way that Sunderland lost against Leicester. It was right back to the worst of last season, the collapses at Southampton and against Villa and Crystal Palace, the way that the goals just once one went in, then the roof fell in. It looked as though there was absolutely no progress from last season whatsoever. Had Sunderland gone to Leicester and lost 2-1, and people would have gone away and gone, you know, poor result, not the start they wanted, etc., etc. But that was right back to the worst of last year, and 4-2 flattered Sunderland, as you know. It could have been 8-2, Sunderland's sort of embarrassment would have been complete.
I think the worry would be, if we're going to talk about the transfer side of thing and how that's going to impact the team, everyone at the start of the season, I feel as though the general feeling was among supporters and everyone that we'd sorted out the back line. We've made those signings and everyone seemed generally comfortable with them. I mean, I'm still not totally convinced in Quatez, but everyone seemed relatively happy that he came. Kabul, I quite like Kabul, but people weren't sure about him. We brought in Matthews, who's a young talent, and it was all, oh, we need to buy some forwards. Well, at the weekend, the panic is now that, oh, wait a minute, is it an individual problem with players, or is it a unit? My personal feeling is that it's a unit problem. It's not the players themselves, and it's about wanting to defend and defending properly. And I did mention on ITL that I was a little bit worried about the defence in that in pre-season when I saw them at Doncaster that one time, it was really sloppy. And I was thinking, is that because it's a pre-season game and they're just a little bit, you know, the concentration levels aren't there that you'd expect in a proper game? And when we got to the proper game, they got absolutely annihilated. I mean, Doncaster went through them like a hot knife through butter when we played them in that first half, not so much a second, and it was like that again. And I was thinking at Doncaster, if we play like this in a Premier League game, they'll just have an absolute field day. Yeah. And that's what happened at first. I mean, Mahrez had a field day. He was, you know, pulling all the strings, all Brighton, you know, he was a decent Premier League player. Yeah. He's not like a world beater.
No. Nope.
But he was absolutely, you know, just down that left side, crosses, it was just a constant threat. I mean, the second goal,
Quartez was making, you know, too many mistakes.
It's too casual, isn't he?
Kabul can't possibly be match fit, and it showed.
I think, to be fair to Kabul, he was pretty much defending on his own at times. He looks bad. I think he probably I haven't seen the highlights, but I imagine he probably looks worse on the highlights because he's always there trying to stop the end, and it got to him. I mean, Van Aanholt just left him exposed. There was times where I think it was Okazaki and Vardy were just sitting behind him and just going, right, I'm going to sit in this space.
Yeah.
And then Kabul was just 2-on-1 against, sometimes he was 3-on-1 trying to stop people coming down our left-hand side.
And even Costel, doesn't help with my optimism I'll be honest.
Even Costel Pantelimon as well, you know, didn't cover himself in glory with the three goals. I mean, forget the penalty, but the other three goals. He did make saves that stopped it from turning into a hammering, but he also might have done better with certainly the two glancing headers.
I mean, the ball's travelled too far for both. I mean, the Vardy header, the ball's gone about 15 yards after he's connected with it, and the second one the same. You know, but I mean, you look at the defending for the second one. I mean, what Johnson? I mean, talk about a talking gesture challenge, pathetic. And then the ball comes over, and Van Aanholt had three looks at Mahrez, and he's watched him. He's behind us. Oh, he's in front of us. It's in the back of the net. I mean. Yep. Casual, terrible defending, like really bad. That's basic, the basics that they didn't do. I mean, Leicester, the goals they scored, the chances that they missed were probably easier than the goals that they scored.
Well, if you're talking about the back line as a unit there, then are we surprised that, because when we signed Kabul and we made the Quartez deal permanent, I kind of, like most people, probably thought we would finish the season with those two as the partnership at the heart of the defence. However, I'm a little bit surprised that O'Shea hasn't been eased out. You know, you talk about it, our captain, and I know he's had the odd shocking performance like they all have, but generally he's been quite sound in the last couple of seasons. Yeah. So are we surprised he didn't start and he wasn't eased out, perhaps, as the season went on?
Yeah, I was surprised that O'Shea didn't start. I thought he would probably start instead of Kabul, just because Kabul wasn't fully match fit.
Exactly.
You know, the weather in the longer term, Kabul would be one of Dick Advocaat's automatic picks in the starting 11. Fair enough, but I would have started with the fit players and then gone from there for your first game. Certainly, that was one thing I thought. Also, on the half hour to change to 4-4-2 showed that even a manager of Advocaat's experience can get his tactics completely wrong. Obviously, 4-3-3 with Defoe in the middle of a central three was a huge failure.
We knew that in January. We knew that when we signed him in January.
Well, Advocaat knew it because he played him on the left of the front three when we were getting those results as the season ended. Yeah.
Fletcher and Graham had been injured, hadn't they? So they weren't probably not fully fit. And you've got a player to form. I mean, he's going to be one. He's probably the top earner now.
Yeah, he's your one quality striker. And you've got to get him in the team somewhere.
You've got to get him in the team somewhere. And this is the problem that we highlighted in January when we bought him. Yeah. That he shouldn't. It was, everyone got carried. Like, I've read a few people today saying, oh, we need to make a statement of intent signing and all this. They need to sign the right players for the right amount of money. And whether it's on loan, whether it's on a permanent, it doesn't matter, because you don't want to be in a relegation battle again. And if we're going to try and progress, sometimes you have to have a short term plan within your long term plan. And if your team's full of good players, it doesn't matter if they're on loan, if they leave after 12 or 18 months, if you replace them, that's fine. And that's how they've got to look. They need to fill the team with players who are better than they've got, and they've got to get those players no matter what. But again, they're restricted within the budget. You can't. It's not easy to just go and buy these players. You know, people talk about a lack of ambition at Sunderland, and I can't agree with it, because it's like me saying I want a Ferrari, so I'm just going to have one because my ambition is to have a Ferrari. Well, I can't drive for starters, and I can't afford a Ferrari. But so that means I can't go and get one, and that's a position Sunderland are in. We're at the top of the wage bill.
It's the wage bill that's maybe people. I think the point that people are missing, perhaps, because they're looking at all these other sides spending big money, and I think it's a natural sort of human condition to sort of compare,
isn't
it?
Keeping up with the Joneses, isn't it?
The frustration is you look at teams that, you know, that you could put on a comparable level to Sunderland, or look at Stoke. Can their wage bill be so much different to Sunderland's? You look at the players that they're bringing in.
Is it the argument that
Crystal Palace?
But Palace have only been in the Premier League for 2 minutes. So they've been in, compared to Sunderland.
Yeah, but
we did what Palace did.
Yeah.
6 years ago.
But Palace are bringing in a player like Connor Wickham on the wages that he was on at Sunderland. Yeah. A player that Sunderland needed to get off the wage bill to get his wages off. What does that tell you?
Does it resurface the old argument then that perhaps some of these... I mean, you mentioned there Wickham is certainly not... He won't have took a pay cut. Kabay isn't going to come cheap. But some of these other players perhaps are on less than maybe players at Sunderland because of the whole geographical thing again? Because that's been suggested in
Crystal
the past.
But anyway, Crystal Palace's squad won't be bloated with bad, like, the players that we've got, like our situation.
That's what I'm saying. Do we need players more to attract them to the area? Because that's been suggested before.
But when we're talking about dead wood, we're talking the players that you named, Gareth. You named four players there: Mavrias and Roberge and Bridcut and Buckley. I mean, can they be on such huge wages?
I bet you they're on.
They're only four players.
60, 70 grand between the four of them.
Between the four of them. Well, so you're talking about what, 15,000, 16,000, 17,000 pound a piece. That's not a fortune in Premier League terms.
But if they're not playing, it is. If they're not good enough, it is. Because that's the point, isn't it? That's what I was saying. If we got rid of, and if you add Graham and Fletcher into that equation, you get rid of one of them. I mean, I bet you Graham will be on the best part of 30.
Yeah.
Fletcher will be on the best part of 30.
Martin O'Neill contract.
Yeah. So they're going to be on a fortune.
Yeah.
So you look at that situation. You get rid of one of them, you're looking at £90,000 a week that you've probably saved off the wage bill from five players who aren't really contributing. I know Fletcher actually did okay. Like, I'm not a massive fan of Fletcher at the moment, but haven't been for the last 18 months, but he did all right when he came on at the weekend, and he helped Defoe out, and Defoe was probably, over the 90 minutes, Sunderland's best player. Lens, I was watching him, and all that bullishness and everything before the game at the weekend, and it's good to hear. I'm not going to write him off. I'm not going to slag him off at this point. But you just looked at him, you thought, you watched him, realise the magnitude of the situation that he's going to find himself in.
As the one, in my opinion, the one true quality signing that Sunderland have signed. One quality player is not going to, one quality addition is not going to be able to carry that team.
Not wise playing. If that was a centre midfielder, you might say perhaps.
Yeah.
Or a centre back, someone in the spine of the team, maybe.
Yeah.
But you're not
He's going to provide you creativity going forward, not on Saturday, because really, after half an hour, it was damage limitation.
I mean, you looked at him. When the penalty went in, I looked at him and he was just like shell shocked.
Well, I mean, he's probably never seen defending like that on Saturday in his life, apart from last season, neither did I.
that's the thing. It's sad that we've kind of come to expect this, and you feel a little bit, you don't want to be too harsh at times, because you want to keep that sense of perspective, but it's because it keeps on happening, and you can't get blame some people for getting hysterical about certain things and getting annoyed, but you go into that first week of the season, it doesn't matter who you are, even the worst teams we've ever had, even before the 15 point season, I was saying everyone had written us off. But you're a fan, and you primarily stick up for your team, and you say, no, listen, we're not going to go into it with this negative mentality. It's the first game of the season,
It's really, that's what was really frustrating. I mean, I must admit, I came away from Leicester and I was quite angry on behalf of the 3,000 Sunderland fans that you know, went all that way and were treated to that for their troubles. You know, it was a lovely sunny August afternoon, and I bet they must have thought that there were plenty of other ways they could have spent it.
Bee garden.
But they you know, turned up to support the team, and they did support the team all the way through. You know, despite what they saw going on in front of them. But the frustrating thing is that all the optimism and the hope that comes with a new season, the thought that this time things might be different, that Sunderland might have a decent start, a decent campaign, it was all gone in half an hour. And you just thought, you know, this is just no way to go on. That's just such a depressing outlook. I mean, you mentioned the 15-point team there. That 15-point team under Mick McCarthy, it was for nearly every game that season. They were never outclassed in a game. They were just not quite good enough in any of their games. But on Saturday, Sunderland were absolutely outclassed by a very ordinary Leicester team. A Leicester team that looked certainties for relegation for three quarters of last season. You know, but Leicester managed to continue their momentum from the end of last season, and Sunderland didn't.
I mean, they were just faster, sharper, 3 yards ahead every time.
It's always back to pace and power, the lack of it.
I don't even think it was pace and power. It was just urgency and fitness.
Yeah.
It was fitness.
Pre-season then. Yeah.
Dick Overcar said after the game, he did say after the game, he said, talking about Sunderland, he said, you know, we're just too slow, everything's one pace. You know, he can see the problem. I mean, it's up to him to put that right somehow, but, you know, he's no fool. He's an experienced coach, and he's going to be trying to drill that into the players. But it seems to be a mindset, a mentality.
I mean, usually it's Catamall who's the one who adds that drive, and he was gone after half an hour.
Yeah, I was thinking about this today. Doesn't Catamall always seem to need a few games to get into his stride almost? And when he comes back from injury and suspension, the first couple of games, he always seems to be a bit rusty. I don't know if I'm remembering that rightly, or whether I'm just saying that because of what happened on Saturday.
After but that's injury, certainly how it certainly.
Is. Yeah, so you're thinking first game of the season, he always seems to take a while to get started.
I'm not sure about the start of the season, but when he comes back from an injury or even a three-game ban or whatever, then yes, you know. But normally at the start of the season, he seems to be pretty good.
He scored beauty in the first game last season.
When he came out the tunnel, led them out, I looked at him and thought, he doesn't look right to me. Yeah. He looked pale. Right. Like, I thought, he looks ill. Like, I don't know if there's anything gone on or anything, but he just didn't look fit. Like, he didn't look well. And then that penalty he gave away, I mean, that's so, un-Catamall, to put that challenge in. You don't see him do that anymore. You don't see him go to ground like that anymore in those situations. And it was so off, not something you'd expect to see from him anymore. And
maybe there was a problem there.
I'm not making excuses for him. But
it is interesting.
He wasn't in there on his own, like you said, Stephen. There's a collective effort in there. There's Rodwell and Larson. I mean, Rodwell.
It is interesting, you know, if you were going to change to 4-4-2 and you were going to hook one of your two central midfielders, you know, most Sunderland fans would say that Rodwell is the one before Catamall. Yeah. So maybe there was something. I'm not aware of anything, but if he had been ill or something the day before, then maybe that's something that would have influenced Dick Avocar's decision. But I don't know whether that's true or not. I'm purely guessing there.
He's got a goal in him, I guess, Rodwell, they'd argue. Even last season when he was nowhere near what you'd expect of him, he'd still scored three or four goals. I mean, Rodwell, you still have criticism again. I mean, at the second half, I mean, the game's gone. That's the thing. The game's gone in the second half, and Leicester have dropped off. And I thought, back end of the second half, where he was at least trying to offer for the ball and get on it. I mean, he wasn't doing a lot with the ball, but at least he was offering for it, and he wanted it, and he was trying to get something going. I mean, that's... But it's not enough. It's not we're talking about buying players on big money. I mean, that's £10 million we spent on Jack Rodwell. You know, you've it's a 5-year contract, and we said we've got to give him the time to deliver. But you know, you'd hope after a full pre-season that he's had, he might have offered a little bit more. And he's probably in the side on reputation and reputation alone, really, at the moment, isn't he?
talking about individual players, because I know we keep saying it's collective effort, but you mentioned Rodwell. I know he did get a lot of criticism from fans. Van Aanholt, you've already touched upon it. What was the situation with him? Because attacking fullbacks, you know, when your fullbacks get forward and the marauding fullbacks, you're always going to have a problem, James, of being exposed defensively. Now, it isn't rocket science to say your centre midfielders are normally the ones who cover. So was there an issue there, or was it a lack of responsibility from Van Aanholt himself, or a bit of both?
It's a tricky one, but I mean, what's beyond doubt is that Van Aanholt for me was Sunderland's worst player on Saturday. Yes, he was up against a winger who I rate highly, did last season in Riyad Mahrez.
I think, on a side note, sorry to interrupt you, but I think he's somebody we should have gone for in the summer.
I completely agree. I think if you're looking for a winger and you're considering the likes of Adnan Januzaj, why not try and make
you
a move for
Leicester?
You
feel as though Leicester are a kind of team you could buy a player from.
Mahrez has signed a new contract at Leicester, so he's going nowhere now. But had Sunderland looked at that earlier in the season, he would have been someone on my list. You know, Van Aanholt was completely outdone by Mahrez, not only in terms of the goals, but just generally over the course of the game. I know that the biggest question mark against Van Aanholt is whether he can defend. You know, there's an argument that he'd be better off employed as a winger rather than as a left back. I don't know about that. I'd have to see him play further forward and then make a decision. But certainly defensively, there's big question marks.
When you're a fullback, you see the whole game.
Yeah.
When you're a winger, you don't. It's behind you. So I think until somebody's played as a winger, after they've played at fullback, it's like you say, you can't really judge. Mm. I think coming from deep's different than being playing off up on the shoulder. Yeah. But I think you're right to an extent about the defending thing, but we've seen he can defend, we've seen he can concentrate when he wants to. I think it might be an attitude issue with Van Aanholt.
He's in a mood because his cousin didn't sign.
Because
Leroy Furst, his cousin, isn't he? He spat his dummy out. Leroy's not coming in.
You don't like to level the criticism, this particular criticism I'm going to with players, but I felt as though he gave up. I felt as though he gave up a little bit in that, like, he just stopped doing. He stopped going back over. So once he'd gone forward and the ball possession was lost,
there
might be
frustrating. There were certainly times when he was sauntering back when the ball had been given away and he gave that impression. There didn't seem enough urgency to get back and make a challenge.
He left Kabul completely exposed, sold him down the river every time.
There needs to be midfield cover though as well, doesn't
there?
You need to prepare if you have a player like Lentz who plays high up the field, and that's.
But Lentz was playing. Lentz went to the right hand side. Mm. Johnson was playing on the left.
Well, even so, the players who were intended to play high up the field, obviously, I didn't watch the game. But you have to plan for that by the centre midfielders you then pick.
You have to do a bit
of covering over that side. Who was on the left of the three?
It wasn't a three at that point. It was a two.
Yeah.
Because we were playing 4-4-2,
which makes it harder.
Which makes it harder.
So I guess what you have to see when you move to a 4-4-2. Then is you need to rein your fullbacks in a little bit, don't you?
I'm assuming that Adam Johnson went over on that left side because he would offer Van Aanholt more cover than Lentz, because Lentz isn't much of a defender either, but you wouldn't expect him to be. But possibly there was more cover available from Johnson than from Lentz.
Well, you look at, I mean, Johnson's performance was pretty garbage anyway. I mean, he was laboured. And he looked, you know, he missed.
He was at least looking to create something. He created the goal for Defoe, and there were a couple of other instances where he put decent, balls into the area. But he wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't a day for forwards.
And also, you know, not to get into this topic of conversation, but you know, from a making him captain, you just think, you know, when someone's in the spotlight, just. Don't do things that are going to point eyes in that direction. Give it to someone else. Give it to Larson or something like that. You know, let's not be naive. We know what the whole ground is singing. And it was going on for the whole game. And, you don't need... Why make life more difficult than you need it to be? You're 3-0 down after half an hour. The captain's been taken off and then you do that. It's just... When we implode, it's like, you know, when that... volcano went off in Iceland, like, that's it, game over, you know. Nobody can travel internationally. It's like we're really, really, really exploding. It's sometimes that, I think that is the source of the frustration. It's all right, like, I try and be level-headed, But I'm sitting there, like you will be, James. You know, you're sitting next to people like Benno and Nick, who watch every game. You sit next to Chris Young. And you're looking at each other and you're going, yeah, uh-huh.
You can see it coming, yeah. That's the problem.
You just know. You know. Like, you know, and it's unacceptable. We said it last season. It's unacceptable. And the team that started was not much different. We had, what, two new players, really.
Lens Cabool and Quartes,
he's played.
Yeah.
And then Matthews came on second half. He started badly defensively, but yeah. He grew into it a little bit. And he looked a threat going forwards. But, I mean, I'll tell you what, Jones, he's escaped because... Dear me.
Yeah.
He was absolutely... He was like... You remember Jones in the Bradford game?
Mm, yeah.
He was like that. He couldn't do anything. He kept on giving the ball away. He couldn't get it... Every time someone came to screen him when he had the ball, he tried to pass it round them and gave it straight to them every time. Yeah. It was absolutely garbage.
He was only saved by the fact he was the second worst fullback.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were both awful in their own ways. They were probably a tie. I mean, I think Jones was, like, quietly terrible, whereas, like, Fanano was, like, jumping up and down going, look how awful I've been. So it was, like, a strange, like, sort of combo. But
you over-elaborated on that point a little bit and you spoilt my very laboured segue when you mentioned international travel.
Make it anyway, though.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Well, we talked about it a few weeks ago, saying I would think going to America is a stupid idea.
James, we keep saying we look leggy. Leicester were at it, unless I'm mistaken. I don't think Leicester went travelling around the world, as far as I know.
They did at the end of last season, but less said about that, the better.
Yeah,
I don't know about in pre-season.
They went
to Austria, actually. They went to Austria on pre-season.
Okay.
But that's,
so Europe.
Yeah, no, which yeah. is fair enough and reasonable yeah. enough. Do you think that makes a difference? It's hardly ideal preparation, is it? You're travelling on
six flights in 10
yeah,
days.
Yeah, exactly. It's ridiculous.
I don't think it's a good idea. I don't see that there's any value in it for Sunderland. You know, if you're Manchester United and you're going to the Far East, or if you're Liverpool going somewhere, then, you know, I don't think it's great for the players, but there's some commercial value in it. I would question how much commercial value there is in Sunderland going to America or somewhere like that.
You could probably argue that there was more commercial value in keeping Altidore for shirt sales than there was probably flying out to America for pre-season.
Yeah.
In a game that Altidore didn't play, or any of their better players.
Yeah, well,
the ground was half full.
That game would have... They played about 20 players in the game, didn't they? And, like, they were all reserves. I mean...
You know, I think that that's something... This is where you have the two halves of the club, the football department and the rest of the club possibly pulling in slightly different directions, and I think that the football has to come first. It's as simple as that. And I know that Dick Abakar, his future was up in the air at the time that the deals were done for the trip to America and Canada, but in future I think the manager should be in a position where he can turn around and say, no, we're not doing that, that's not how I want my team to prepare.
Yeah, I guess it was an ideal time for the club to say, okay, let's go to America, because there wasn't a manager in place to oppose it, was there?
Do you think anyone would oppose it? I mean, we've been before. We've played as meaningless.
I think a strong-minded manager would have something to say about it.
Like a 40-minute game when we went with Mick McCarthy or something against Vancouver Whitecaps, I think, who are now in the MLS. But at the time, they weren't.
There were games over there.
Before the 15-point season, we went out to America.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, when we talk about this, it sounds like we're making excuses and being revisionist. But I think it's a common concern among many people that the commercial side of things is, you know, starting to run, you know, spoil the football side of things. This is like you say, there's no real commercial value in Sunderland. We're not on the television, like, hardly on the season. You know, Sky really don't pick our games. You know, maybe it's just best if you focus on the pitch and start doing quite well, then maybe you might become commercially viable and that'll take care of itself, instead of trying to shove a team down people's throats when you're competing against Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool, who are already well established out there. You know, you're trying to get people to decide to support a team, you know, out of choice, which, you know, doesn't, you know, as a Sunderland fan, you know, you're often, like I say, 90% of football supporters who support Sunderland don't have a choice in it. It's just, you inherit it.
Yeah. I'm not privy to the figures, Gareth, but I would guess that finishing one place higher in the Premier League would yield more extra money than all the money that Sunderland take from America.
Exactly.
That, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, And I don't know, you know, how are you going to sell this club to people? You know, we've fought relegation for 8 years, even though we've been in the Premier League. I mean, it's, you know, do well on the football pitch, and everything else takes care of itself. And that at the moment, you know, we can't lose sight of that. We can't get bogged down. I think maybe that's why we're in the position we probably are from a financial perspective with wages and whatnot, is because you go in too fast and you're trying to compete immediately. You're trying to go two or three steps above yourself before you can. And fortunately, we're not a club like Portsmouth, for example, who have a smaller fan base and could never sustain what they did. And I think, you know, you look over the years from a financial perspective as well. We've been in the Premier League for a long time now, and you know, we have signed players for lots of money, and we have had quality players, and it hasn't worked, and we didn't kick on, and now it's a case we're just trying to claw back, we're treading water, and like, there's no way. The only way to improve is to spend more money, but if you're not allowed, if you break the rules, and if you break some people say that the FFP thing, other teams break it, so why can't we? Well, I'm not an expert, financial expert, but I believe there's a Premier League curve, like a Premier League cut-off, and there's a European cut-off, a UEFA for one. Now, the Premier League cut-off incurs a potential points penalty if you break the rules. So, you know, you talk about, I know. I think some teams in the Championship have had transfer bans, haven't they, for breaking the FFP? But that was the UEFA FFP, not the league one. I don't know if the Football League are governed by an internal FFP like the Premier League.
So, it's a mess, and it's currently changing as well. Yeah. I think even UEFA are relaxing it because it's coming under challenge from all parts, and I think that's going to be something that's looked at. So I think
the thing is that we've plateaued in this FFP, and it's almost like everybody's being put in the place. But if they lift it, it just means the teams who could afford to capitalise during the FFP and take the hits financially, you know, still going to have gained an advantage in that time. And then on top of that, they're going to start, you know, because it's the commercial revenue that gives you the advantage. So teams like Manchester United, Manchester City, who sponsored themselves basically, you know, all of these sorts of teams can manipulate the system to suit themselves because they can draw in massive commercial contracts. Sunderland aren't going to attract the commercial sponsorship levels that those teams can, which gives them that advantage with the wages. So I mean, the FFP really it's an ass, isn't it, because it's not going to not going to help.
Very flawed, isn't it? But I'm looking at some tweets here. I was going to save some of them for Thursday, actually, because a lot of people are asking about the team selection and that. And we have covered a lot of these.
Yeah,
we have. But we'll still give the people a mention.
Say,
you know,
but
Ben writes in, can you mention our weak midfield, of course, which disappeared after 5 minutes, and we had. And he says it's no wonder Dick Avocat tried to sign two. One of those fell through. I think we have touched that as well. And Joe Smith's asking why the players weren't fit. Wants to know if left back's a priority after Van Aanholt. I wouldn't suggest so, perhaps, because didn't you say that
afterwards, saying if people were saying, like, around the ground, like, oh well, if Alonso's available for £3 million, then go and get Alonso. I mean, I don't think that's a bad idea, because you can't have too many. I think Alonso's a good player. I liked him when he was here,
and Matthews,
if it was
two
or £3 million,
they can both play left back, can't they? I think that was the idea.
Allegedly.
Stephen Barker saying if Dick does go two up front, which I'm not sure he'd go all out two up front.
I think he will. Talk about an idea, but I think he will at the weekend.
Okay, well, he's asking if we need another striker now. We've kind of mentioned as well, I think Dick's already come out and he couldn't have been clearer about it. He says he will have to change things if he can't get a new striker.
Quite simply, Dick wants to play 4-3-3, and he's established that you can't do that with Jermaine Defoe leading the line. So you either need the right kind of striker to play through the middle and play 4-3-3, or else you have to play a different system.
And if you start getting on a 4-4-2 as well, again, we'll talk about it on Thursday, it's back to the centre midfielders again. You need to have good centre midfielders. Was Jaccarini available to play at the weekend?
He was on the bench, didn't come on.
Because we've said before that he might work with two sort of solid midfielders behind him now.
If you got Mbeya
and Catamol, then Jacarini ahead of them would be an option, I guess.
Yeah. But that's if we get Januzaj, that's where he'll go, innit? Januzaj will probably sit in that hole in the screen.
Or on the right, and they can sort of move about, can't they? Interchange the three if you were looking at.
I mean, I saw Jan and Villa's debut.
I was going to say, well, you were there, yes, weren't you? The under-21s. I saw you tweeting.
One of those. Yeah.
I was going to ask
you there to
that.
See him. You know, he looked a good player. Obviously, he's working on his fitness, but he looked comfortable. Passed the ball well. He's got a great range of passing. You know, he's not going to get you many goals, but that's not what he's there to do. He's kind of like Lee Catamol in that area. You know, he's a defensive midfielder, but he looks good. Plenty of physical presence. But then, of course, you know, he lived up to his sort of volatile reputation, and you know, got involved in that, headbutted Norwich player, and off he went. And so that kind of renders all talk of what's he like as sort of like, apart from that, Mrs. Lincoln, did you enjoy the play? Mm-hmm. You know, it's
well,
we've got a couple of tweets actually coming since we started.
With Mbeya, it's funny. I think he only had one red card in his career before that. I mean, that's just bizarre.
Maybe he was
it?
Just frustrated at the result at Leicester, and
he's bought into it already.
But we've had a couple of tweets I will mention, actually, that came in since the show started. Tommy Boyd makes a good point, especially when we're talking about how tired and unfit perhaps the players looked. He wants to know why we think Advocaat only used two subs.
I'm sorry, I think who was left on the bench?
Jacarini, Graham.
Jacarini, Graham, so you're talking about strikers, aren't you?
Obviously O'Shea, Manone.
O'Shea, I was surprised that O'Shea didn't start. But yeah, I mean, possibly O'Shea to come in. But attacking-wise, I don't think that, you know, it would have been worth tinkering too much up front, to be honest, to be honest with you.
I mean, there was that once he'd... Because I think maybe it's had something to do with the fact that he changed the system completely after half an hour, so that affects the way you make changes in the game from the players you've picked on the bench. So if you stay in a 4-3-3 for 90 minutes, you've got options for that system.
Yeah.
If he had to make the changes he probably could have made, might have changed. He could have done a like-for-like Defoe for Graham, but Defoe was playing well, so he probably wouldn't... and that, I mean, he could have brought Jacarini on in a wide area. I thought maybe he might take Lentz off... back end of the second half because he started to look a bit tired, but actually as he sort of came again a little bit, and I mean he does look a good player, Lenz. Some of the turns that he made, and he put a great ball in right at the end of the game where he absolutely skinned his fullback, and he had put a lovely ball across. And I think if Defoe had been clattered just before, so I think if he hadn't been clattered, Defoe would have probably been, it's perfect for him, you know, 6 yards out would have been a tap in. But maybe that's a reason.
Big question before Advocaat's lack of sort of substitution, didn't we? When other players were sort of running themselves in the ground against Newcastle, didn't he sort of refuse to make changes? I can't remember. I wouldn't be able to say what.
There's something logical in that, though, because you look at how weak we can be at times, and when you disrupt that system and that solidity by introducing somebody new into a fraught game, that it could crumble, because you know how fragile it is. Like, who's to say? I mean, when we play new, when you 1-0 in the game, we're not winning games 2 or 3-0. So when you 1-0 in the game, if the other team equalise, you've got a fear. You've got a fear for Sunderland because they could go.
If you bring in a sub, you know, into one of these games as well, if it takes them 5 minutes to get up to speed, what happens in that five minutes?
Exactly.
That's the kind of thing.
A couple of tweets I want to finish on, then just quick responses, I think, for this. Anthony Thurkel wants to know if it is too soon to be worried about the lack of creativity in shock on defending, or can we just write it off as one of those days? We have a lot of those one of those days as well, don't we?
Isn't it?
Yeah, I think that there's more creativity in the team this season with Lentz. I think Lentz will be, you know, a good creative spark. What worried me from the weekend was the defence.
Agree with that, Gareth?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's
looking for a reaction so early in the season, aren't you? It's
frustrating. Well, I think after the, straight after the game, people are always talking about how it's Norwich and Swansea going to be these massive games, and we talked about where the fixtures came out, it was a relatively decent start. The problem is, if you're not ready, then it's a bad start because you haven't got the players in place, you're not fit enough, and you've thrown away four or five of your opportunities to get the results. And then you're playing catch-up and you've got the worst games to come. So
if you leave it until deadline day, you know, you've played four games by then, that's 10% of your season gone.
And then they're going to take two or three games to get into it as well. I mean, we sign players at the end of the window and...
There's a great Twitter quote on, I think it's Pab's tweet of the season already on the first episode. Yeah, Michael Paul says... Were Furt and Lombard's failed medicals really down to the fact that we don't have an airport? And should we sign Mourinho? That's great, that'd be fair. I wouldn't take them literally. Yeah. That's a good tweet.
We should thank the people who contributed. So Michael Paul, Tommy Boyd, Liam Waite, Mike Grady, Stephen Barker, Joe Smith, Cyril and Ben Wright, who all sent messages, which we probably would have come back to later in the show like we usually do, but we pretty much covered all of the points that were suggested. Okay. So
pretty obvious, aren't they?
But thanks for
lack of presence in midfield, shotgun defending, the things we would talk about anyway, but thanks for getting involved, absolutely. Yeah. Is that a wrap?
Yeah.
I can't see the timer from where I am.
Is
it around the 45-minute mark? Are we in injury time?
Around 46.
Stoppage
time. I can only apologise that it's been such a depressing first
start.
No,
it's been a good... Well, it's been...
Let's hope people listen.
I think it's better, isn't it, when you've got something to moan about? If everything's going well, everyone, you know, everyone likes everything, and that's boring, isn't it? Misery. That's what
we want.
Know.
Misery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it then.
Okay. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Thursday with Into the Light to preview. We're not going to call it a must-win game already, are we? We might drop it in just for the crack and the banter. And that.
Let's say it's must-win then.
Must-win for the must-win game against
Let's
Norwich.
Pick it up. Put
must
the pressure
win game.
On.
Pressure on Advocaat already.
Pile it on. Will we have? Do you reckon we'll have? Will have been linked with any new names by Thursday?
I hope so. Give us something to talk about. If anything,
I'm sure they will.
Pedro plays tomorrow night, doesn't he? Probably his last game for Barcelona. Mm. Is that tomorrow night?
Yana's eye one's hinging on that apparently.
So that's the one. I'll
wait for the meltdown when he turns us down. Everybody says, "Well, why didn't we sound him out before?"
They probably should sound him out before.
You would hope that has happened. To be fair,
yeah,
that would be pretty catastrophic, wouldn't it?
Van Gaal will probably have a word and say, "Do you fancy it?" And then let's hope they've done that, because otherwise that would show horrific foresight.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to get off then. Thanks for listening. Over and out.